Okay, I would like to discuss with you an in from the parasha. This week, the parasha Pinchas is the sugya of Yerusha. The rules of Yerusha are presented. The rules of the Torah are sons inherit, and daughters get absolutely zero. Talk about a sound clip, right? If someone says, quote me on that. That's what it says in the Torah. It says in the Torah that when there is bas b'mekayim ben les lo klum, when there is a daughter and she has a brother, she gets nothing. All of the assets of the father, of the parents, go to the son, not to a daughter. A daughter has no part in Yerusha. The only time the daughter gets Yerusha is when the Torah was mechadish. This expansion, but no slavchot. Slav only had daughters. He had five daughters. So he had five daughters. They divided the estate because there were no sons. Had there been even one son, then one son would have gotten everything. Bas b'mekayim ben les leiklum. A bechor gets pishnayim. That we know. And what about a wife? A wife gets nothing. The husband dies. The wife gets absolutely zero. The only thing she gets is a ksuba. There's an obligation that a husband has to a wife when they get married. In the case of death or divorce, he has to pay her 200 zuz, which was some double it to 400 zuz, whatever the situation is, which comes out to be enough, basically the formula is enough money to live comfortably for a year. And that is a very big difference of opinion among the poskim. How much money does a person need to live comfortably for a year? It can range between different poskim, between $30,000 to $60,000. Yeah?
I remember once having on a shear on Rambam, a Rav who was a lawyer also, saying that the kids owed the mother
the ksuba.
Not ksuba, it's all everything, and
no.
To make her life the same as it was before, even to the extent of going into slavery or something.
I'm not familiar. I don't know. I don't know the details of what you have to see what you're quoting. But generally speaking, the only obligation according to Torah law a husband has to his wife after his death is to pay the ksuba. The ksuba was structured, the Talmud Chazal, for a woman to live comfortably for 1 year, which was then valued at 200 zuz. So today, Rav Moshe says that when we look at the ksuba, when a husband signs the ksuba, even though it says in the ksuba 200 zuz, and he doubles the kesef zkugin, kesef tsarif, the whole set of ksuba, basically it's expensive to get divorced. The person wants to get divorced.
Ksuba itself in today's dollars, yeah. I understand it's like $24,000. Just 200 zuz,
right? So some want to say that's it. 20, that's enough to live comfortably for 1 year. Some say that's not necessary, so you may need a little bit more. All right, that's the issue. But the point is, it's not so simple to get divorced. The purpose of a ksuba was shlotehei kala be'enav lahoitzia. Person has nothing. He's going to get divorced. He's going to have to pay the ksuba, and that's a significant amount of money. And that would be a deterrent. The person should not just get upset. Some before the ksuba pelegash, mean the cooking is no good. That's it. You're out the door. You're out this way. Out the door is going to cost me. It's going to cost me $30,000. You know, you'll think twice before you get angry. Okay, but the point of what I want to discuss with you is an article. This is a fantastic article I downloaded from online by Rabbi Ari Marburger. I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name correctly. He's a young rabbi. He's featured many different places. Every so often you see his name and his picture in the paper. He's a Baki in Choshen Mishpat and Yanim. And this article specifically addresses estates, practical guide to estate planning wills, those issues. Estate planning wills and halacha. A five cone? Could be. He quotes here a lot of all the sources, and this is just convenient for me, for a layman, and that's why I took it, and it's extremely well written, and it touches upon an enormous amount of material. This article is 50-something pages, and I want to just run through with you touch upon some of the issues relating to modern-day wills. Now, the problem with the will is as follows. As we just mentioned, minat Torah, a wife just gets ksuba. That's it. Enough support for 1 year. the Bechor, the firstborn son, gets double, Pishnayim. Everyone else gets one, gets the remainder, and daughters get nothing. Grandchildren get nothing. Tzedakah organizations get nothing. So here's the problem. The problem is the average person who leaves this world, Achamei Ve'esrim, if he had a successful career and has some assets, has some money in the bank, typically would leave his wife, maybe everything. Okay, and there'll be no division among the children at all until the wife dies, until the wife dies. So that right away is against Torah law, because right away the wife is right away there'll be a delay until anything will be paid. But even if a husband does decide to distribute his assets at time of his death, he very likely will give a very significant amount of money to his wife, which is a lot more than it says in the court, that more than the ksuba allocates. And today, a person is not going to abandon his daughters. Okay, the daughters are going to get at least as much as the sons, people would prefer. I mean, that's the society we live in. And a person may want to give some money to his grandchildren. And a person may want to give some money to an organization. He may have been affiliated. A person was very successful and leaves over a large amount of money. He may want to have some zechus in the next world. He may have part of his will. He wants to write a sefer Torah for him. He'll want to give money to an institution that he was very close to, that he spent his whole life working for. Some people have money, so they want to distribute it in different ways. All of these techniques, methods, are in violation of the Torah's Seder of Yerusha. And he's writing this in the will. So what he's doing in the will is connected to the Torah. Is a person allowed to write a will after he dies? His money, according to the Torah, should be divided in this fashion. The Torah presents a technique, a method of how the money is divided. And he is giving instructions that after his death, the money should be divided contrary to the Torah's instructions. Connected, are you allowed to do that? Are you allowed? If the person is alive, when you're alive, you can do whatever you want. You can give away, even that's not so simple. You can do whatever you want. A person has a lot of money and you're changing what would normally be after the time of death. But let's put that aside. If a person is alive, you can do whatever he wants. Now, why do people not do whatever they want when they're alive? For one very similar reason: taxes. It's a very big problem because there's something called a gift tax. There are state taxes. You have to talk to a lawyer. The laws are always changing from year to year, state to state, country to country. And giving away a person's assets when you're alive can be a tax nightmare. And it can be a lot cheaper for the family and for all of the estate if there is a will. And the way every single secular will, there's no will in the world, a secular has a lundis, that it's chal a moment before you die. There's no such thing like that in secular law. Every single will is, the money goes into an estate, and then these after death, then at some point in time when the lawyers and the court get their act together, a year later, whatever it is, then the money will be distributed among the heirs, or among the beneficiaries, whoever they may be. That's achanisa. Achanisa, that's been done according to secular law in order to benefit all parties involved as far as taxes are concerned. And no one's going to be giving away the money when the person is still alive, because then there would be double taxation. There would be a gift tax, whatever the situation is. There can be a lot of problems. But it's gnavish connected kolatara kula. So what in the world is going on? How do we deal with all of these issues? So first we should be aware that Rav Moshe says, and the Achiezer, Rav Chaim Oizer Gudinsky, major pasuk in Europe before the war, pre-war, he says that they both acknowledge that it has been minhag Yisrael from time immemorial to rely upon all the leniencies in making secular wills. You don't need a halachic will. Today, if you pay attention to the RCA and the OU and the National Council and the Aguda, they're having symposiums and forums and conventions advising the Olam to have a halachic will. This is a chumrah. This is an innovation of this generation. Traditionally, people were not into halachic wills. It's become a new thing today. Rav Moshe writes, we rely upon a secular will. How are we allowed to rely upon a secular will? So the basic understanding is that the Yorshim are moichel. They're moichel this is the will, the ratzon of the parents. This is how they want the money to be distributed. And even though according to Torah law, the children are entitled, the children are moichel. There's really a seder hayirusha. The money really goes down to the children the way it's supposed to go down to the children. And the children are just moichel. This to be mechavit the parents. The parents want. The problem is when you have an ugly situation where the children are not moichel.
Exactly.
Okay. By Hasidim, it's very common that there's a daughter. The daughter gets nothing. It's not a joke. My father was involved in some of these dinei Torah where it gets ugly, and the people they can be a feud in the family, and the boys can say, "Listen, there was no will. There was no halachic will. There was no will altogether. It was just an estate. There was an estate, and then there's secular laws which come into play. I'm a man. I'm a Bukhar. I want to follow din Torah. I'm a Shomer Shabbos. I'm a religious person. It's my right. It's my right and my duty to follow Torah law. I'm a Bukhar. I get Pishnayim. And all my brothers, too bad for them. And my sisters, too bad for her. For them, they get zip, zilch. That's what I want." So what do you do in that case? Can you tell them? What? Yeah. Goes to their children.
No, it doesn't. No.
According to halacha, it does.
What?
I think
so. People involved.
Yeah, I may make a mistake. I'm not mistaken. He goes through all the whole seder here. He goes through everything here. Okay, I don't know. I'm not going through all the details. But if not,
second marriage.
Ksuba. Second marriage is a ksuba. You only have a ksuba obligation. You have a will. So then the will says to give the money to them. There's a will. Okay, there are a million different issues. Let's just touch upon some of the issues. First of all, money in the bank. Let's talk about pishnayim. The rule is you only get pishnayim from assets that are muhsuk, that are in your possession. Any money that comes in as a debt. In other words, let's say you lend someone $1,000. I lend the person, Reuven lends him $1,000. Reuven dies. And Reuven has 5 children. Does the Bechor get Pishnayim from the $1,000 that has yet to be collected? Absolutely not. The Bechor only gets Pishnayim from money that is present, that is current, that is in possession of the Meis B'Shas Misa. Money that is owed to the Meis, a Bechor does not get Pishnayim.
Even
if there's a shtar, and it's meshulam with karaka, doesn't make a difference. Here is the big problem: money in the bank. Most people I know do not stuff cash under their mattress. They don't have bars of gold under their mattress. Maybe I'm wrong. Money is in the bank. When you give money to the bank, basically it's a choif. The bank owes you the money. In halacha, 99% of the place are of the opinion that when you put money in the bank, basically the bank is a loan. In halacha. Halacha looks at it as a choif. The bank owes you the money. It's not tangible. Therefore, money in the bank is not subject to pishnayim. That's a very important halacha. There's no din pishnayim money in the bank. Only without even, if you take that by extension, some even want to go so far to say, let's say you have cash. Let's say the person indeed has a safety deposit vault, and in the safety deposit vault he has $100,000 cash. Is that called a choy? Because what is a dollar bill today? A dollar bill really is a check. A dollar bill is that the government owes you the equivalent of whatever a dollar is worth. It's really a shtar choiv to the United States government to pay so-and-so a certain amount of money. That far, most poskim do not go. Since dollar bills are treated today as a tangible commodity, even though technically speaking it's not even really true anymore because it used to be, they keep on changing. Is it based upon gold and silver?
No longer,
but even they're always playing around with economics. But things always change, but you can make an argument that even cash is not really called muhsuk, it's called a choif. Most poskim don't go that far. They hold that actual dollar bills, it's called muhsuk, and a bukhar, indeed, if there is a safety deposit vault, and in the safety deposit vault you find $100,000 cash, or even $5, or even under your mattress you have a suitcase of cash, that the bukhar maker then gets pishnayim. Now, here's something very interesting. What about a bank that's owned by Jews? Okay, you have a bank, immigrant bank, or Apple is owned by Jews? Really? Okay, I know that. Apple, okay, you have a, well, let's say the Israeli banks, Bank Leumi. Are they still owned by Jews? Who knows? You never know today. You never know today. Owned by China? Owned by the Russians? Who knows? But let's say you have a Jew, a bank that is 100 point, what was it called? They went out of business, point.
Shabbat is open.
What were they called? It was a Jewish bank.
Was it funny on them?
Yeah. He had a branch also in Bar Park. Mayor Eichler and his partners, they closed down, they went out of business. But Point Liberty, what was it called? Point Liberty?
Yeah, yeah.
So it was a Jewish bank. So how do they operate? What has a bank? A bank is the easiest business in the world. It's the easiest business to have a bank. All you got to do is, I lend you money, and you pay me back more money. You don't have to be a computer programmer. You don't have to have a business. Over, it's the easiest business. Here's $100. You pay me back $200. Can't get easier than that. Problem is, that is ribbis. It's awesome in that Torah. So how do you avoid ribbis? So we spend a lot of time learning ribbis. Heter iska. How does heter iska work? Half the money is a pekodon, and half is a loan. A Jewish bank has a more difficult problem than a goyish bank. A goyish bank is a pure choif. When you give money to a goy, when you give money to a non-Jewish bank, they own your money. Your money has disappeared into thin air. They have a choif. They have, you have a bunch of zeros and ones on a computer screen, which means they owe you money. It's a choif. A bechor does not get pishnayim. But a Jewish bank, when you give them money, they're giving you back interest. Even if it's 0.00001% interest, they're giving you supposedly a small amount of interest. How are they allowed to, how is a Jewish bank allowed to give you interest? Because when you give them the money, you're not giving it them as a chov, you're giving it as a pikadon. Half the money is a pikadon, half is a loan. Heter iska. The rules of heter iska are such where the money is not considered a loan, it's considered to be a pikadon. So that would be more problematic if a parent, if a person has money in a Jewish bank, some want to argue half of the money in a Jewish bank is subject to pishnayim. Unbelievable. But that is not so simple, because the money is in turn lent out to other people. It gets very, very complicated. It gets in a Jewish bank, it's lent out to Jews, lent out to Goyim. It gets very, very complicated. But if you have money in the bank, if it's really subject to Pishnaim, generally the assumption is money in a Goyish bank is not subject to Pishnaim. Even if money is in a Jewish bank, it's also not subject to Pishnaim, because it's in turn, the Pekodon is in turn lent out. I don't know the details, but it's very complicated. But let's put that aside. Let's go to, what about stocks? Let's say a person leaves over stocks in the company. Is a stocks called Matsu? Is it subject to Pishnaim? Or is stocks called Choyf? So I'm not mistaken, if Moshe and many people can say it depends if you're a minority stockholder or you have a majority share in the company. No one today in any big company has a majority share in the company. It's considered to be a Choyf. There's no Pishnaim. If someone leaves over in a Yerusha shares of stock, it's no different than money in a bank, and the Bechor is not entitled to Pishnaim, unless you're Bill Gates and you own more than 50% share in your company. I don't know if he still owns it, so he gave up shares of his company. But let's say you have a company. What about all these Google and Facebook? I'm not sure how the situation is, but unless you own more, a small company, if you own more than 50% shares in a company, then many parties can say that's called Matsui, because you have control, and then the Bechor would be entitled to receive Pishnaim. Okay, let's go to some other ideas. What about joint bank accounts? A person dies and he has with his spouse a joint bank account. According to many poskim, it's not subject to Yerusha. Joint account, automatically, the money is owned jointly by the other party. So it's not subject to Yerusha. What? Then it's a different situation. What about a life insurance policy? Life insurance policy. Does the Bechor get Pishnayim, or let's say in the life insurance policy, a daughter is one of the beneficiaries in the policy? That's fine, because that is paid out. That doesn't exist. Life insurance does. Well, I take it back. There's term and there's whole. Term life insurance l'chol hadeis is not a violation of circumventing the Yerusha rules. Doesn't exist. Term life insurance, the money does not exist until after the moment of death. Yerusha is only a problem when the money exists at the time of life. And then there is death. Where does the money go? Does it go this way or does it go that way? But term life insurance, the money doesn't exist. It's yesh me'ayin. Person dies, and poof, money now grows out of trees. Now the money appears. And there's been a document, there's been an arrangement, who's going to get that money? A daughter, a grandchild, a spouse. So there's no issue whatsoever with Yerusha when it comes to term. Whole life insurance is different. Because whole life insurance, you already have the person when he's alive already has that money. He already has value when he is alive. He has some value. He can cash in if he wants. So now when he dies, the rules, the money is going to be diverted to one of the beneficiaries. So that is again a question. Is that called a muhzuk or is that called a choyv? Pashtus is a choyv. It's an obligation like money in the bank when there is no din pishnai. Okay, so these are just pointing out different issues. Trust funds are extremely complicated because there really is, trust fund is a new concept which only came into existence relatively recently, and it's very hard to find any precedent in halacha. They do want to try to show that it's a concept in the Gemara, such a concept of a trust fund. That is a very big dilemma for the many modern day poskim, how to deal with trust funds. Because trust funds, basically, you're giving away the money to someone else and you're losing. There are different types of trust funds. There are trust funds where you have control, you don't have control. There are many variables in trust funds. And each situation has to be dealt with differently. But the point is, the reason why a trust fund may be is because it's not your money anymore. When you put away money in a trust fund, it's not like money in a bank. Money in the bank, it's my money. It's money. I have title. Trust fund, it's not yours anymore. It's out of your possession. It belongs to someone else, and there's someone else who has control over the money. That's what a trust fund is. There's a trustee. So that is a very complicated, that's probably from all the different matters in halacha, trust funds are probably the top, are the most complicated to deal with in matters of Yerusha. Now let's touch upon some other issues. What many people do today is, the people do today when they make a will, is they try at least to be mekayim the Torah parsha. That's what is advised. Many rabbanim, many poskim say when a person makes a will today, do whatever you want, but leave over a amount of money, a significant amount of money, which will be mekayim the mitzvah deraisa. Not the mitzvah, the din deraisa of Yerusha. So let's say a person has $100,000, making up numbers. He dies, loses $100,000. He should at least set aside $10,000, is not part of the will. My will only involve $90,000. I'm going to divide equally among my five daughters and one son. Okay? I have $90,000, I have five daughters and one son. They should divide the money equally, even though the son is the Bukhar. The son is the Bukhar, and the five daughters, and I'll leave over $10,000, I'm just making up numbers, and that should follow the Din Torah. And what's the Din Torah? B'makom bein ein bas klum. A certain amount of money should be set aside, a small amount, a large amount, to fulfill the Din Torah. Whether it's Pishnayim, a daughter doesn't get, so on and so forth. And then the majority, the bulk of the money, then you make a will and you do whatever you want. Another minig that appears to have been a minig, an ancient minig, which is practiced, is that people would give in a will a daughter a half a chelik. I don't know why dafka half a chelik. They would give, they wouldn't abandon their daughters, but they would not give them a full portion because they you don't want to do something which shows that you're completely ignoring the Torah. We have different reasons today why we have to make a will. Well, money has to be divided fairly because of machlokes, but a person still has to do something to acknowledge that there's a Torah law. And the Torah says a daughter doesn't get, a son gets. A son gets pishnayim. So it leads. So the custom was to give a daughter a chatzi chelek zachar, half of what the males get. A male gets $100, so the daughter will get $50. Okay, today it seems that this custom is not practice like it used to. Today it seems everyone does, people, I don't know, people just get divided equally to a certain degree. All right, but, okay, right, let, that is, what? I don't make a halacha.
It's not if the girls don't get it.
Halach, but the minig is that you don't, that was not accepted. You make a good point. What I've read is that the Chassam Sofer and the Chazon Ish were very machmir to follow the Din Torah. He held that you shouldn't do anything different. The Torah says the boys get, the girls don't get. The Torah says in Pishnayim, the Chazon Ish, the Chassam Sofer were of the opinion you should not make wills that circumvent the Yerusha of the Torah. But that's not the minhag. The minhag is many Gedolei Yisrael did not follow that, and they did make wills. They follow regular secular wills, or Moshe says secular wills. And basically, the children, when they get the money, they are moichel. They have to be moichel. In fact, they have to make a kinyan to be moichel. To be moichel that it should not be a violation of Torah law. Okay, now,
so according to Torah law,
yeah,
what happens to the wife after the year of the Ksuba? She's out on the street.
Yeah, that's right. According to Torah law, she has 1 year.
You can get married again.
Yeah, that's right. That's
what, the kids throw around on the street. I mean,
well,
the kids are supposed to take care of.
The name of Chuyiv, I'll call according to Allah. Kibud Av V'Em is only from the parents' money. And then Mikra Adin, you're not Mechuyiv to be Mechavi the parents from your own money. Only Mechuyiv from the parents' money. The parents say, come over and help me. As long as you're not losing money, and as long as you're using their money for their, so that's the Torah law. You want to be Mechader. You want to be mahader, kol hakavod. Man yitav lach v'harachta yom. You want special bracha. Hey, but Torah law, it's not required. Now,
the bechor can't say I don't.
Yeah.
Somebody came to him and said his father was in a different town.
Yeah.
He was sick. He was supposed to he go visit him. So he came to Rav Chaim and he says, but the kibud is only from his money. And he doesn't have any money. So he says, you're right, the kibud is from his money. So walk.
Okay.
The bechor can't say I don't want to get two pishanayim.
Okay, now let's discuss what?
The bechor can't say I don't want to get pishanayim.
The bechor can be moichel, but is that the right thing to be moichel? The Torah gives him pishnayim. He's entitled to pishnayim. It's not clear. There are many different opinions in this matter. Very many different opinions.
Pishnayim is not. It's not a double share. It's actually double when everyone else gets.
No. Let's say there are four brothers.
Right.
One is a bechor. You divide these into five portions.
Five.
And the bechor gets two portions. Right. So that's how it's divided. Okay.
What happens if it's Michael and Pishnayim?
No.
What happens if it's Michael and Pishnayim and afterwards he says, "Oh, I've got chalos. I want it back again."
No, once you give it away, it's okay. Okay, there are many. Let me just point out what's done with Zman Hazeh. What's done with Zman Hazeh, there are two techniques. One technique, if it, a chumrah to do a halachic will, this is how it works. And one technique, which is not so good, is to have a halachic will where it works when you're alive. Where a person basically writes a document, and the document says that I want this to go into effect one moment before I die. So everything is being distributed when you're alive. Now, I mentioned that's problematic because of taxes. If the government knew that you gave all your money before, so all of the laws of New York State tax code and the federal government, all these things go haywire. So there's one says, don't ask, don't tell. Okay. I'm not joking. That's really what it boils down to is, Enoch and Ami, the secular law, we're going to make believe, we're going to follow the will, the secular will. But as far as a halachic loophole, it's a problem. It's like selling the chametz. Does the shtar mechir really work legally? Well, many rabbanim today they make it in such a way where it's accepted in the court of law mechiras chametz. But even if you have a mechiras chametz where according to the secular law it's not a legal transaction, it doesn't matter as long as halacha it's good. It's good. So that's one approach. You basically make a will, and the will is that the will should be executed a moment lemafreya. After the moment of death, the will was executed when I was alive. The Mela, I'm not violating Torah law. Everyone gets what they're supposed to get. The problem was, where is the Kinyan? Where is the Kinyan? Was that you have to make a Kinyan. To make such a transaction, you must make a formal Kinyan. Where is the Kinyan? So there's an enormous amount of literature working out that problem, where the Kinyan is made. How do we solve the Kinyan? So every one of these solutions are problems. Manish doesn't need a kinyan, but he's not a shchime when he's making, when he's doing this, he's not a shchime right yet. Or you want to say din de malchus sedina. Or you want to say, okay, there are many different issues which it's going to take very too long to go through all the different issues. Okay, but that is one approach. There are many problems with this approach. One of the problems with this approach is you can't change your mind. In other words, if you make this type of transaction in advance, that you want it to be chal a moment before you die, you can't change your mind. Many people, they make wills when they're young, and then over time things change. Once you give this matana, it's done deal. You can't make any changes. Also, what happens if a person acquires new assets in the meantime? Let's say he starts a new business and he has new assets. All those things are not included in this will. Person likes to make a will to plan what's going to be no matter what happens. If I'm rich or poor, if you do this technique of making a will and you want it to be chal the moment before you die, the rules of kinyanim, the rules of transactions do not work, allow you to make changes, and do not allow you to do not take into consideration things which happen at a later point in time. So let me tell you in a nutshell what today is done, or how at least he presents the modern halachic rule that is acceptable. Can you turn off the sound? It's making me what's done today. And this is what is done today, and it is appears from Rabbi Marburg. This is the ideal thing. It's very, very, very interesting what it's done. A person writes a secular will. Okay? Person writes, at the time of my death, I want all my assets, I want 30% to go to this son, 50 to this son, 10 to this son. You go make whatever you want. Then you say, that is secular will. Then you say, you write another document, what we're going to call the halakha, and you say, I have a daughter. Daughter should get nothing, because I have sons. I want to give her $1 million. I'm giving her a gift. $1 million. I'm only gonna have $10,000 when I die. I'm giving my daughter $1 million, and I want the choiv to take effect a moment before I die. A choiv, a gift to my daughter, $1 million. So then, if the person were to die, everyone agrees that goes into effect the moment before the person dies. He obligated himself with the kinyan to give his daughter $1 million. Problem is, all he has in the bank is $10,000. So who gets the $10,000? The daughter. Everyone else, his 12 children, will get zip, zero. Because the choiv, the gift he gave his daughter, was $1 million. But he writes in the shtar, however, if the children will, I'm giving her $1 million, but if they will be willing to do the following things, I'm getting a little confused now. If my children will be willing to make an arrangement and follow my wishes, and they should be meichel each other, and arrange the money according to my liking, then I cancel the gift of $1 million. I cancel. So therefore, what you're basically doing is you're forcing the children to do what you want, that they should be meichel each other. It's, technically speaking, they can demand a Yerusha. They can demand, each child can say, I'm a Bechor, I want to get Pishnayim. But if you're going to demand the Yerusha, then guess what? I beat you to it. I gave my daughter everything. I gave her $1 million. I don't have $1 million, so she'll get whatever's available. But if you'll do what I want you to do, if all of my children will sit down at the table and you'll all do what I want, and you'll give this child 10%, and this child 30%, this child 50%, and this daughter, and I'll give this stock organization, you'll give them $1,000, you'll do what I want, then guess what? I cancel the gift I'm giving my daughter for $1 million. I'll have the daughter. I'll go give it to the government. I want to give the United States government, with Uncle Sam. I love Uncle Sam so much. I want to give $1 million. But if you'll do what I want to do, I'm canceling my gift to Uncle Sam. So this way, you're forcing the children to be moichel each other and to come to an arrangement which you are specifying how you want it to be done, but they're going to have to do it themselves. I'm not doing it. Because if I go and I give instructions that when I die, I want my money to go this way, that way, that way, that's a terrible thing. You are doing kneged the Torah. The Torah said that when the person dies, this is how the money is to be distributed. I'm saying, Torah, I know better than you. You said to do it like this. I'm giving, making a will to do it like this. That's not right. So you know what? No, I'm not saying that. Let the Torah do what the Torah wants. I'm telling the children, I want them to be good to each other. I want them, I'm giving them advice. And I want them to, and if the children don't want to follow my advice, then you know what? I'm going to outsmart you all. I'm going to give all my money away to so and so. That is basically that solution. The reason why that solution is ideal is because that solution allows you to make changes until the very last moment without redoing it, without making new kinyanim. You can make changes at the very last moment. You have to deal with all the mechanics of how these things work. And also will work for any new assets or any losses that happen from the time the will is made until the moment of death. It solves many, many problems. It's a solution it has a certain name for it, but this is basically the ideal type of halachic will. Again, not everyone requires a halachic will. The custom until recent times was you don't do a halachic will, and we rely upon children. But the problem is sometimes children don't want to rely; they want to do in the they want to go the halachic route.
Suits them.
What suits them, and they can get very ugly. So. This is just a teeny, teeny mashu of Inyana Yerusha. If you want, you can download this for free. It's a fantastic article. It really opens up all the issues by Ari Barberger. I don't know. I just did some searches online. I came across this. And estate plan, just type in halachic will in Google. Halachic will. You'll come across a few things. But by far, this is really outstanding. Outstanding. What? Rabbi Ari Marburger. Rabbi Ari Marburger. It looks like you'll see right away, it'll come up in the PDF file. It's 56 pages. And there's an enormous amount of information here. It's very well written, very informative, and very interesting. Okay, so we'll leave it with that.